20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 488 of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. My name is Andy Herman. Today, I am going to be breaking down the Packers' frustrating 37-8 loss to the San Francisco 49ers. Wow. Where to start? That was certainly a frustrating game. I kind of want to wrap it up with one word to describe that game and just put a big bow on it right to start with. And that word is concerning. That was a concerning loss for the Green Bay Packers. And the reason it was so concerning is because we just saw this game. We just saw this game 3 weeks ago against the Los Angeles Chargers, where they went to the West Coast, completely did not show up, completely had no answer, completely had no response through the majority of the game. And they completely blew it. They completely blew the entire game, laid an egg, and the entire thought process kind of after that from myself and a lot of other people was, okay, there's some accident forgiveness there. The team had been really good all season long. It was a really fantastic record that the Packers had at that point. You're willing to forgive one game like that if it's just one game. No harm, no foul for the most part. You obviously hate to see it no matter what, but you can maybe forgive it a little bit because it was really the first time it happened. The other loss to the Eagles was competitive. They had never shown any game like that in the past under, you know, Matt LaFleur. So that was kind of the story after the Chargers game. But this one was arguably worse. They go West Coast again. They have another tough game with another Bosa brother. Apparently their kryptonite is California teams with one of the Bosa brothers on it. But in all seriousness, they went out and they played worse than they did in that Chargers game, at least in my opinion. So that is concerning. It is incredibly concerning. And the 49ers basically took this the Packers playbook of how to beat them, and they ran it throughout the entirety of this game. And the Packers' weaknesses that have kind of manifested themselves in different ways throughout the course of the season, all of them showed up. You know, they really usually need to win the turnover battle in order to be successful. Today, they lost that turnover battle and couldn't get one on defense. And that was certainly something from the opening drive where they turned the ball over that really put Green Bay behind the scoreboard. Really, they went down 7-0 pretty much immediately. Green Bay's inability to be efficient on defense and kind of get the opposing team off the field, that was a problem. They couldn't get the turnovers. The Packers' inability to create big plays on offense, the inability to not give up big plays on defense. We saw the George Kittle play. You know, the special teams, more negative return yardage. J.K. Scott had a horrible day punting. It was all the things that showed up at different parts of the season, and they all happened, again, very similar to that Chargers game just a few weeks back. And why this one is so concerning as well is there was a lot of things that were really in Green Bay's favor going into this game. Now, of course, it's a tough road game against a very good football team. No question about that. But Green Bay was healthier. They were coming off a bye. The 49ers were playing their third game in 13 days. 2 weeks ago, they played an overtime game that went all the way to the very last play. Last week, they played a very tough game with the Arizona Cardinals that went until the very end, really went to the last play of that game. This was a bit of a tired, beat-up 49ers team, and I know they were getting back, you know, George Kittle. I know Samuel and Sanders were both playing, but this was a beat-up team and a tired team, especially in comparison to the Packers, and it did not look like that at all. If you were to say which team looked like the team that played three games in 13 days and which team was coming off its bye, you would have flipped those two teams completely. So that's why this is so concerning. And really, there's no excuse for there ever to be one game like that throughout the course of a season if you're a contending football team. To have two where you completely completely crap the bed, for lack of a better term. It's completely unacceptable. And that's really the first big red flag, in my opinion, of the Matt LaFleur era, is having two games like that so close in proximity and really showing no ability to learn from your mistakes in the first one. That's concerning. And that's why that word is the word that kind of sums up this game and sums up this performance, and is really the thing that took me by surprise, because everything that I thought going into this game that Green Bay was going to try to do, and everything that Green Bay said, you know, that they were going to take the bye week to self-scout and get healthy. It seemed like a tired football team that played a lot of games in a row. This was their opportunity to come and show that Chargers game was in fact a fluke, to show that they can compete with some of the best teams in the NFL, like the 49ers, and to completely lay down and not even be competitive was really surprising to me. I honestly did not see that type of performance coming at all. Certainly within the realm of possibility that they could have gotten beat, and maybe even by double digits. You know, maybe they lose by 10 points, 49ers just outplay them, but in no way, shape, or form did I expect the Packers to go out and get completely blown out of that game and never be competitive. I did not think that was in the realm of possibility at all, and certainly that's the case of what happened. So one game can be a fluke. The Chargers game can be a fluke. Two games is not a fluke. That is concerning. That is an issue, and they have to figure it out. The 49ers and Chargers have put a lot of things on tape that other teams are going to be able to copy and look at going forward. And if Green Bay didn't figure out in their bye week, well, now they've got a short, you know, regular 1 week time frame where they're going to have to look at it again. You know, thankfully, I guess you're going against the Giants and the Redskins in the next two games with Daniel Jones and Dwayne Haskins, and maybe not some of the most potent teams in the world that hopefully you can kind of get right and get some momentum going before, you know, playing the Bears and the Vikings and the Lions to finish up the season. But that was as concerning of a game as there has been all year long, and they have a long ways to go if they want to finish this season off the right way. The game with the Minnesota Vikings will loom large over the course of the next month, but one game at a time, and they've got to get the ship righted as they go to New York, all the way East Coast now. That's never an easy thing. I think Green Bay's still going to be probably a pretty significant favorite in that game, and it's not like they put a ton of high intensity snaps on the field this game, unfortunately. So hopefully they can bounce back 2 weeks, you know, gone from their bye week, make the corrections, and get in, you know, go into New York and get the win before having two home games against the Redskins and the Bears. But this was disappointing, to say the least. And if we want to take a look at some of the numbers from this game, the numbers were atrocious, as you would probably expect them to be. Let's start with the offense. The offense had 70 plays in total that amounted to 198 net yards, or 2.8 yards per play, which is atrocious. They dropped back to pass 45 times and ended with 81 net passing yards. 81 net passing yards on 45 dropbacks, 1.8 yards per dropback. And oh, by the way, of those 81, 15 of those were by Tim Boyle in garbage time. So that just goes to show you, you know, regardless, how awful the passing offense was. They ran the ball okay if you look at the total numbers. 28 rushes, 117 yards, actually had more rushing yards than the 49ers, had 4.2 yards per rush, but some caveats here as well. A late 12-yard run by Jamal Williams, a 21-yard reverse by Alan Lazard, and 13 yards rushing by Aaron Rodgers actually made this look a heck of a lot better. The running backs in and of themselves really got nothing going, and Aaron Jones finished the game with yet less than 3 yards per carry. So was okay as a team running the football, but not great if you kind of look at it when it mattered and when they actually were trying to establish the running game. They really struggled to do so. Aaron Rodgers was 20 of 33 for 104 yards, did have the touchdown pass to Devontae Adams, but was sacked 5 times. That was certainly a big issue within this game, was the protection by the offensive line. Green Bay was 1 of 15 on third downs. 1 of 15 on third downs. That one conversion, the second to last play of the game on that 12-yard run by Jamal Williams, they were 0 for 14 leading up to that play. So third down, a massive, massive issue in this game. Devontae did get his first touchdown, but only 7 catches for 43 yards, just over 6 yards per catch, and only a long of 14 yards, so he couldn't really get going in this game. J.K. Scott averaged 37 yards per punt. His long was only 41 yards and didn't have any inside the 20, so it's not like he was trying to pin teams deep in their own end zone, and that's why some of the punts were shorter. He had a brutal game punting, and some of the maybe excuses recently, well, it was in bad weather against Carolina, or whatever the case may be, this was in perfect weather in San Francisco, and he had a horrible day punting. And if you haven't noticed by now, J.K. Scott is a streaky punter. And if you've ever watched his punting style, everything is very robotic and very mechanical. And if anything goes off just a little bit, there's no room for variance there. It's basically a drop, and he takes a huge windup and a huge follow through. And again, everything is set to be very mechanical with it. But if one thing goes wrong, and one thing, if the drop gets inconsistent, if the leg motion gets inconsistent, if anything's off, it's going to go horribly. Now, we saw earlier in the year, if things are going right, it looks great. It looks amazing. But if he's in a bad streak and things are just off just a fraction within his process, it can go really bad really quickly. And that's where things have gone over the course of the last few weeks. Hang time's been an issue for him as well. Punt return team had another negative yardage performance, which is just mind-blowing that Green Bay, at this point in the season, 11 games in, has negative punt return yardage. They would have been better off if they just fair caught every single punt up to this point in the season. That is insane and unacceptable, frankly. The 49ers had 339 yards of total offense on only 45 plays. So again, defensive efficiency has been a big issue. Yeah, Green Bay didn't, allow a ton of yardage, but they allowed big yardage on very few plays, and the efficiency was certainly there for the 49ers. George Kittle, what a surprise. Tight ends killed the Green Bay defense. 6 catches, 129 yards, and a touchdown for Kittle. And no matter how you want to break down the statistics, no matter how you want to break down the performance, it was ugly, ugly, ugly all the way through. And the statistics certainly match what I think everybody saw on tape for the TV tape through the first watch through. And I get to go back and watch every single one of those snaps, over 70 snaps on offense. So please, keep me in your thoughts and prayers. I'm sure the grades are going to be very, very ugly as well, because there's not much good that can come out of that when you have those type of numbers and that type of performance on the whole. Some of the more concerning aspects. I've used that word, concerning multiple times now, but some of the things that were so concerning about this, first of all, the way that you start the game. And we can talk about the referees a little bit, and the referees put the Packers in some really difficult positions to open the game. I thought they actually, Green Bay got a couple calls as the game went on. Granted, it was not really a game at that point, maybe, but it wouldn't have mattered. Let's not kid ourselves. And there's going to be games where you get some calls. There's going to be games where you don't get some calls. There were some really crappy calls in this game. There have been really crappy calls in just about every game throughout the entirety of the NFL this season. This was not a loss that's on the officials. It didn't help. It sucked, but this was not on the officials. And, you can talk about that, but this opening drive where you start, you get a first down, a little bit of a, BS taunting penalty, to be fair, to be honest, but that pushes them back, but they still have a first down. Then you've got kind of a bizarro deep ball to MVS. You have a rush that goes for 0 yards, and then the sack fumble, and you really spot the 49ers 7 points to start the game. And to have, again, 2 weeks to prepare, you script your opening offense, and to come up with that as your first drive on offense and not only not get points, not only not get production, not only flip field position, but to get the opening kickoff, everyone's jacked up, got a ton of energy, and to turn the ball over and again basically spot the 49ers 7 points, that is unacceptable and that is concerning. So starting the game with that turnover was concerning. The pass protection all game long. And again, you go back to that Chargers game. The biggest issue with that Chargers game was their inability to really match up with Melvin Ingram and Joey Bosa. And now, you know, you catch a little bit of a break. D Ford's out. Yes, they still have Armstead and Buckner and, of course, you know, Nick Bosa. But they had no answer for the edge rushers and the pressure that San Francisco brought. Five sacks on the game, but the pressure led to a lot more problems than just those five sacks, and the pass protection became a major issue. Yes, Brian Bulaga went down with the injury, and that's something that you need to be prepared for, though, you know, frankly. Brian Bulaga is not a player at this point in his career who's going to give you 16 games. You'll take the 12 games that you get, and the 12 games that he plays at a pretty high level, and you'll take that. And hopefully he's healthy down the stretch run is what you're hoping for. But you have to be prepared that he's going to miss some playing time here and there. He's at that stage in his career where, again, it's not fair to expect a straight up 16 games out of him. His body's not at that point. And that's not necessarily his fault. And like I said, you're more than willing to pay for the 12 games that he can get you. But you have to have a plan in place if he goes out. And I really enjoy Alex Light as a player. He's struggled, you know, this game. And I don't think I'm going to surprise anyone by saying that. I'm kind of excited to go through and see how he grades out and how he performed. But at first glance, it didn't look pretty. But you have to have a contingency plan for that. And if he can't get the job done, and I'm not saying that that's the case, it seemed like that was the case, but if he's not getting the job done, then you have to kind of have a plan B. Philadelphia today went with their backup, Andre Dillard, and Dillard struggled throughout the majority of that game. They made a change in the second half, and it went a little bit better. They still struggled in the second half as well. But if something's not working, you have to try some different things. The Steelers today, Mason Rudolph struggled through the first half. They went with Devlin Hodges, and they came away with a victory. So they didn't have a contingency plan. I don't think they did enough to help Alex Light throughout the game once Brian Bulaga went down. But even when Bulaga was in there, and even not anything to do with Alex Light, this was not a good enough performance from a pass protection standpoint from beginning to end. And from, you know, Bakhtiari to Lindsley to Jenkins to Turner to Light to Bulaga to the tight ends to the fullbacks, everyone that was in pass protection, it just wasn't good enough. The other concern, no counter punch. The 49ers punched Green Bay in the face early and often and throughout the entirety of the first half. And Green Bay could not counterpunch, could not get anything going, could not even just get to halftime to regroup and hopefully only be down maybe 10 points or 13 points. The end of the first half was ugly, which really let, you know, San Francisco really grab a hold of that game. And there was never a counterpunch. And finally, when you did kind of counterpunch and you get the 8-point drive, it was an 8.5-minute drive when you're down by, you know, what, 22 points, 23 points, I think it was, 23 points at that point. Yeah, San Francisco is probably going to be okay giving up an 8.5-minute drive where you get 8 points. And then, oh, by the way, again, you know, they come back and just hit a shot play to George Kittle to basically counterpunch you right back. Which, and while it took you 8.5 minutes to get 8 points, it took them all of, what, 3 plays to get 7 right back. And credit, you know, Kyle Shanahan. They had their shot play, you know, drawn up, and they had that in the bag for when they wanted to use it. And they kind of kept it in their back pocket for the right moment, and they used it at exactly the right time. Green Bay had just finally got a tiny bit of momentum. That's a 2-score game with about 20 minutes left to play in that game. That is within striking distance for an Aaron Rodgers led offense, potentially. Probably not today, but you get my point. And at that very moment, they took that play out of their back pocket. They had it drawn up. They had an idea that it was going to work against Green Bay. They called it at exactly the right time, and it was the dagger. It was absolutely the dagger that put the final nail in the coffin for Green Bay. Great play by George Kittle. I'm excited to see what Ben Fennell says on this one. He does a phenomenal job of breaking down those plays in intricate detail. I think they caught, at first glance for me, I think they caught Green Bay in a very similar play that Minnesota did earlier this year. If you remember, when Jaire Alexander had the opportunity against the Vikings, I can't remember if it was Diggs or not, but I think it was Diggs. And Jaire Alexander made a huge recovery on the play and should have made an interception in the end zone, but it went right through his hands. And I think it was Diggs who came down with the touchdown. They were in cover three on that play. King was on the outside, Jaire was on the other outside, and in that play, Savage was the center safety. And they ran a crosser. Savage came down on the safety, which I actually had an opportunity to ask Darnell Savage in the locker room after that, and he said that's exactly what was supposed to happen on that play. He grabs the crosser. King goes deep to his side, Alexander goes deep to the other side, and they kind of converge in the middle and displace the middle of that field. And honestly, that's Alexander's play. And against Minnesota, Alexander made a great play to get all the way back deep side of the field. That's not a common play, and his speed and his athleticism and his smarts, frankly, put him in a position to make the play against Minnesota, but he had it go right through his hands, and the Vikings got a big touchdown on the play. Green Bay played it the right way, but didn't execute at the end, and Minnesota got the touchdown. You look back at this play, it looks very similar at first glance. It looks like King's in a cover three to his side. It looks like Amos is going to play the role of Darnell Savage here. He's going to attack the crosser, which is exactly what he did. He attacked the crosser. It just doesn't look at this, from what I saw in this play, if in fact they were in cover three, that Alexander actually got back to displace the safety and get back and cover the center of the field, which left Kevin King completely out to dry. There's a chance it could have been a matchup zone where you kind of play zone to start and then you kind of play man after. And if that's the case, then it is on King. Again, at first glance, I look at this as a cover three again where Alexander didn't get back. It's a tough play. And I think one of the things that really, really goes unsaid a lot of times, because we always look for blame on a lot of different plays. In some situations and in some scenarios, a really great play call on offense makes up for play call on defense, and it doesn't necessarily always have to do with execution. Every single defensive call, whether it's a cover three, a cover two, a cover four, a blitz, whatever, has something that you can beat it with. And if you execute your offensive play the right way, you can beat that play call on defense. And sometimes that just happens. And it hasn't happened enough for Green Bay on offense over the course of the last few weeks. But this was a play where San Francisco got a great look. It was a really great play call at the right place at the right time. And if the play is what I think it is, I don't think Alexander got back. Again, that's a tough play for Alexander, and it's a tough play to read. You're usually when you're in cover three and you're getting way back on your side of the field, there's somebody on your side of the field that you're running with. And if you don't see anyone on your side of the field throughout that entirety of the play, your natural instinct is to look for something in front of you and go attack it. And that's what he was doing on that play. He was looking for something that he could go do somewhere where he could go cover. And behind him is a wide open George Kittle. And I'm remiss to put that on Kevin King at the moment. If it was cover three, that's not Kevin King's play to make. He is not responsible for the inside of the field. But either way, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It does not matter who's at fault individually. It matters that Green Bay gave up a massive touchdown to George Kittle at the very moment that they gained just a tiny bit of momentum, a tiny string of hope that they could, you know, leech onto and try to rally, and they crushed it. And again, a great job by Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers offense for running that specific play. Again, I guarantee they had it drawn up. I guarantee that they knew that that was a coverage that they could attack. They probably saw it on that play against Minnesota, and they used it at exactly the right time. They got the defense that they wanted, and they executed it perfectly. And again, that was the dagger. So those were all very, very big concerns, and I think a lot of what led to Green Bay losing this game in go-away fashion. I wanted to take a look at just the offense and defense a little bit more in depth, and I think it has to start with the game plan, and I didn't think that this was a good enough game plan, and sometimes it's a little bit tough to tell exactly what the game plan was when you get behind early. And I do think they were trying to establish the run, and give credit to the 49ers. They did a good job of stuffing the run early. Green Bay got away from it. They had to pass, especially once they got down. They didn't have Brian Bulaga anymore. The 49ers were able to sit back in seven-man coverages, get home with four, And it's going to be tough to pass your way back into a game when you can get pressure with four guys and really cover with the seven players that the 49ers have on defense. They've got a good coverage team and they have a good pass rushing team. I mean, just think if they had D Ford too, that would have been even scarier. But, you know, credit the 49ers, but this wasn't a good enough game plan for Green Bay. And again, wasn't a good enough counter when Brian Bulaga goes down and to try to help Alex Light and to try to make sure that the offensive line was functioning well enough to be able to get this offense in manageable situations. And they just never managed any of that. And that was, again, another key reason why they weren't in this ballgame. You can't start the game with a turnover. I want to talk a little bit about Geronimo Allison as well. I've been pretty tough on Geronimo Allison. He has been my lowest graded player throughout the course of the season so far on the entire team. I don't see why he continues to get the snaps on offense. He had the big drop early in this game. He had a block in the back, which seemed pretty ticky-tacky. I probably wouldn't have called it. But a penalty on Allison nonetheless. More concerning is his lack of playmaking ability. He had three catches in this game. Those three catches, a total of 9 yards. Going back to the Chiefs game, so this is what, four games ago. So you count this game, the Panthers game, the Chargers game, and the Chiefs game. So 4 games total. In those 4 games, Allison has 9 catches for 43 yards, less than 5 yards per catch. Something's got to give. You know, he has the drops. He has a big fumble already on the season that did not help Green Bay at all. He is not dynamic after the catch. He's not gaining separation. He's an okay run blocker. I'll give him that. He's a good blocker on some of those wide receiver screens, but it's time to give somebody else an opportunity on those snaps. They simply haven't been good enough and they need to find different options. I didn't see enough out of Jay Kumerow and Alan Lazard today. I would have liked them to see more playing time and Geronimo Allison less. He just hasn't put anything on tape throughout the season. He had the one drive at the end of the first half against the Philadelphia Eagles where he caught the really big pass over the middle and then he caught the touchdown either a play or a couple plays later. A really great end of a drive for Geronimo Allison specifically. And if you take that drive away, the rest of his season has been nothing short of abysmal on the whole. So he's an easy player to cheer for, and he's in a contract season, and I want to see him do well. I hope that he does well, but it just hasn't been there, and it is time to try something new. He was a disappointment in this game. They tried to get him involved early, and it just nothing doing. And I think one of the biggest issues for the Packers at this moment is trying to find different options besides Devontae Adams to try to get going, and right now Geronimo Allison is not it. I also thought Corey Linsley had a tough game today. One of the toughest games that I can remember him having. And I'll, again, go back and grade how he did throughout the course of the game on the whole. But a ton of low snaps. A ton of low snaps today, which did not put Aaron Rodgers in any favorable positions. And especially when you've got an offensive line that's struggling to protect, at least give Aaron Rodgers the ability to look down the field when you get the initial snap instead of having to focus on the snap itself. That was difficult to watch. And then I thought Linsley struggled both in pass protection and in run blocking as well. That, again, was at first glance. I'm going to take a much greater look at it as I grade the game this week. But I thought that was one of his worst games in a long, long time. I have him as my highest rated offensive lineman on the season. One of my top five, you know, players on offense, if not in my top three. I think actually he's number three behind Rodgers and Jones going into this game, and just a really tough performance for him. A couple other notes on offense. I thought Zach Kruse did a good job of pointing this out on Twitter. In this game, Marquez Valdes-Scantling, Geronimo Allison, Alan Lazard, and Jake Kumerow had 10 targets, 4 catches for 23 yards. So your secondary options at receiver, besides Devontae Adams, 10 targets, 4 catches, 23 yards, 2.3 yards per target. Massive, massive issue. You take a look at the tight ends in this game. 4 targets, 3 catches, 15 yards. 2 of those catches by Robert Tonyan on the last drive from Tim Boyle in complete garbage time. Even still, 3 catches for 15 yards on the day on 4 targets. So your secondary receivers aren't getting it done. Your tight ends are getting it done. Granted, nobody on offense got it done in this game, but you can see the issue that that presents. Other teams are going to start taking away Adams. They're going to start taking away the running backs, and they're going to make Geronimo Allison and Jake Kumerow and Jimmy Graham and Alan Lazard and Marquez Valdes-Scantling, it's going to be up to those guys to win. And if they can't, it doesn't, you know, nothing else is really going to matter. You know, teams are going to shut down Adams and Jones come big games, come playoff time. The Vikings are going to do it in a few weeks. If you know, the other teams are going to do it. You know, the Redskins, the Giants, the Bears, they're all going to do it too. That Bears game is, I don't care who's at court. That game's going to be a tough game with the Bears defense still being as good as they are. And with the blueprint that other teams have put out there, Green Bay has to evolve from these issues that they have had. And if they do not, the rest of the season's for naught. And it's good in a way to have some of these issues now. If you don't have them now and you don't learn from your mistakes now, they're going to happen in the playoffs. So learn from them now, get them done with. Again, the issue and what's so concerning is that you saw these issues against the Chargers. You had an opportunity to correct them over the bye. You clearly did not. That's a problem. Last thing about the offense, just looking at the passing offense as a whole over the course of the last three games. This is 3 games worth of statistics. Aaron Rodgers passing, 60 of 97, good completion percentage, 498 yards in 3 games, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, 1 lost fumble, and 10 sacks. On the surface, that may not sound horrible. You know, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, you're at least in the positive there. You know, 60 of 97, okay, your completion percentage is okay. But only 498 yards on almost 100 attempts. It's about 5 yards per attempt. That's really, really bad. You add in 10 sacks, they have 445 net passing yards over those 3 games. Basically, what that equates to, 148 passing yards per game on average through the last 3 games. So against the Chargers, Panthers, and 49ers, 445 net passing yards, or an average of 148 yards per game. That's concerning as well. I know I'm, you know, killing a dead horse here with saying concerning over and over and over, but if you have an offensive-minded coach in Matt LaFleur, and you have Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, Davante Adams at receiver, Aaron Jones at running back, Bakhtiari at left tackle, and you can't manage over 150 yards per game passing, the question has to be, have teams caught on already to Matt LaFleur and this offense? What has gone wrong specifically? And the pass protection is a big answer to that. It hasn't been very good 2 of those 3 games, and that's a big reason why. The weather, I'm sure, against Carolina, you know, wasn't advantageous either, but that's a concerning number any way that you want to slice it. 445 net passing yards in 3 games. All of that, you know, doesn't have you super excited enough from an offensive standpoint. Let's take a look a little bit at the defense. And this one's a little bit tough to judge from a defensive standpoint because your offense did you no favors. You're immediately down 7-0. You kind of hang in for a little bit. Your offense continues to, you know, not put you in advantageous positions. Your special teams doesn't put you in advantageous positions, but you don't make a play. I know it wasn't good enough, you know, however you want to grade it, however you want to slice it, it wasn't good enough on defense. You know, there's the 1-yard touchdown, you know, or 1-play touchdown to start the game, but they allowed 37 points overall. The Kittle touchdown was very discouraging. The inability to stop tight ends continues to be very discouraging. The fact that they are very inefficient on defense is very discouraging. There's not a lot there to like out of this performance. They had a couple bend but don't breaks early in the game again. You can only do that for so often, and especially against an offense like this, and a Kyle Shanahan-led offense, a Jimmy Garoppolo-led offense. I didn't even think the 49ers had to work that hard, to be honest. And again, only 45 plays, and they put up 37 points. And again, it just goes back to that offensive efficiency that, you know, opposing teams have been able to have against Green Bay's defense. This has not been a very stellar defense. And I talk about this all the time. And I think the reason I say this is a little bit tough to judge on the defense is because ideally you would have some level of complementary football. Ideally, the offense would be putting some points on the board and getting some sort of lead so the defense can play from ahead, or at least, you know, moving the ball, and then your special teams is pinning them deep in their own red zone or their own side of the field. And it's not that at all. The offense didn't hold up their end of the bargain. The special teams didn't hold up their end of the bargain. Green Bay's losing the field position battle. They're losing every battle, frankly. So the defense doesn't get a pass here, but they weren't put in a lot of great positions, and they've been having to do this over and over and over and over again, where their offense, at least recently, hasn't put the defense, and their special teams hasn't put the defense in a ton of great positions, and they've had to do a lot of that bending but not breaking. So I know it's not good enough, and I know that they need to improve. They, again, no turnovers, no big plays. They had a couple sacks. I did think, if you want to name an MVP of this game, I think Za'Darius Smith was the MVP. I thought he had another really, really sound performance. He was the best player against the Chargers in that crappy game as well. And he showed up pretty much week in and week out. So kudos to him. He deserves credit for the way that he's played, but I'm not sure anyone deserves any sort of MVP award in this game. And no matter which way you look at it, it just wasn't enough. And I don't think the defense did enough in this game. And I don't think there's a lot of great takeaways from the defense, even though they weren't put in a lot of great positions. And we talked about the special teams a little bit already. We talked about J.K. Scott massively struggling. The return units, I mean, this is all you need to know. Again, they have the negative yards on punt returns again, but all you need to know is that in the second half, the 49ers kick off and Tre'Mon Smith gives the signal for, no return. He, puts his arms out in the, T or whatever that you want to call it. And the ball bounces at the 2-yard line. They're giving up on the kick return when it's a completely returnable kick. They're basically just saying, we're just going to take it at the 25 because we don't expect to do better than that returning the kick. They're not even trying. When the ball bounces at the 2-yard line and you just let it go into the end zone, that's all you need to know about the state of the return units. And that's unacceptable. And I've said that a lot too, but here's why that's so damning at this point in the season. Usually, the reason why teams struggle at special teams at this point in the season is because injuries have hit everywhere else, and you can't play a lot of your core special teams guys because they have to play on offense and in defense, and you don't want them to get hurt. So the guys that made up your practice squad and things like that at the beginning of the season are now counted on to play a ton of special team snaps. That's not the case with Green Bay. They have pretty much their picking of who they want to play on special teams, and it still is very, very ugly. So that is a concern that has not gone away at any point this season. The return units are brutal. The punting's gotten worse as the season has gone along. Their kickoff unit hasn't been great. I don't recall any major issue in it in this specific game, but the special teams as a whole has been near atrocious on the season, and that is another area that needs to get cleaned up if they really want to contend moving forward. I guess your one piece of good news for this game is it doesn't seem like Green Bay had any major injuries coming out of this. The report from Rob Domofsky after the game is that Green Bay believes that they avoided a major injury with Brian Bulaga, and that it seems to be more of a week-to-week type issue than any sort of season-ending type knee injury. So that is huge news and very good news. The only other injury that I saw through the course of the game was Darnell Savage. He had the hit to the head, but he did return to the game, so it seems like he cleared that concussion protocol already. So that's great news. So if there's one takeaway from this game, I guess it's that it seems like Green Bay got mostly out of it with no major injuries. So that's good. But, Brian Bulaga could potentially miss some time. We'll see as the week goes on, and we'll see what happens against the Giants. But yeah, I guess that's one very, very, very minor, win from this game. But I guess it would have been way worse if Bulaga was lost for the season. That would have been a pretty crippling blow. So hopefully that good news is correct, and Green Bay can get him back sooner rather than later. I know it doesn't seem like the time to take a look at playoff seeding, but Green Bay is still very well within the thick of things. They currently see themselves at the number 3 spot So the 49ers are at 1, the Saints are at 2, the Packers at 3, the Cowboys at 4, the Seahawks at 5, and the Vikings at 6. If the season were to end today, Packers, Vikings in Lambeau Field in the wild card round as the 3 and 6 seeds respectively. That NFC wild card and playoff picture still shaping up to be just insane with 49ers, Saints, Packers, Cowboys, Seahawks, and Vikings. It is going to be an absolute bloodbath with those six teams, and why, you know, really it was so important for Green Bay to try to get that bye, to not have to play three games and instead only have to play two. It's just going to be a really tough stretch, and it certainly seems like those are the six teams that are going to get in. You know, Cowboys, Eagles could still be there. Both teams did not look good today, and that might be the weak link, but yeah, that's going to be a tough road no matter how you play it. And if you can have home field, and if you can have you know, only two games instead of three, that certainly seems like a much better recipe. You never know in the NFL, and you know, when Green Bay won their last Super Bowl, it was three games on the road. I just don't see any team, I don't care if it's any of the six teams that are set to get in the NFC, I don't see any team going on the road 3 weeks against this NFC and winning all three of those games. I just think it's too tough of a conference, frankly. So that'll be something that Green Bay has to do. They still can get to that two line. I think today pretty much really eliminated the potential of getting a one seed. They'd have to win out, and you know, San Francisco would have to lose three games of their remaining five. So they probably lost any chance at the one seed, but if they could at least get up to that number two spot, that would be big. But first things first, they got to get back on the right track, and they got to win the division, because that game looming with the Vikings is going to be huge. Speaking of which, the remaining Packers schedule, they go to the Giants this week, then the Redskins and Bears at home, at Vikings in a massive Monday Night Football matchup, likely with the division on the line, and then at Lions to end the season. There's a chance that Green Bay could face Daniel Jones, Dwayne Haskins, Mitch Trubisky, potentially a backup quarterback in Jeff Driskel for the Lions, depending on what they do with Stafford to end the season. They're not going to be in that game, and they may just want to hold Stafford out. They're not going to be, you know, any playoff implications, I guess I should say, for the Lions. So they could be Jeff Driskel, and then Kirk Cousins would be the last one in the second last week of the season, the one quarterback that has played actually well through the course of the last, you know, at least half of the season. So again, it would go potentially Daniel Jones, Dwayne Haskins, Trubisky, Cousins, and then maybe Jeff Driskel. So not exactly a gauntlet of tough quarterbacks. This is an opportunity for Green Bay's defense, hopefully, to get right, get things going in the right direction. But it's easy to see why that Vikings-Packers game seems so incredibly important and likely the key to winning the NFC North. You hate to say it, you know, to just burn this tape for the second time in three games, but that's probably what Green Bay needs to do. But I thought Matt LaFleur was 100% correct in his assessment after the game as well. Everyone in that locker room needs to take a really deep look at their performance, from coaches to the players, the offense, the defense, the special teams, the specialty coaches, everything. Everyone has to take a deep look, and you have to correct the issues that came up in this game again. And who knows, maybe it's just a California West Coast thing. I don't know. I doubt that that's the case. You take those two games away, and this is an 8-1 team, and they look fantastic. You know, that you look at just those two games, and you would say that this isn't a team that has any right competing anywhere, you know, right now. But different teams match up differently, you know, with themselves, and Green Bay could match up well against Minnesota and Seattle and Dallas, and you know, the rest of the teams in the NFC, who knows, and maybe there's a path for them. But if they have to go to San Francisco again and win there in order to move on in the playoffs, it's easy to see that that's going to be quite the challenge, and they have a long way to go if they want to clean up what they showed on tape today to go in San Francisco in a playoff matchup and try to win that game. I think that does it for me. Again, my big takeaway is that this was concerning. This is a concerning loss all the way around. It's just one game, but it's a game that looked a lot like the Chargers game just a few weeks back. And it's just totally unacceptable to perform that way coming out of a bye week when you've had that much time to prepare against really a tired and beat up 49ers team. I don't care if it's on the road. So concerning, disappointing, frustrating, all of them are adjectives that you could use to describe this game. But Green Bay has everything they still want in front of them. And this will be a good opportunity again to come and show what they can do coming out of adversity. They're 2-0 coming off of losses already. Aaron Jones has completely teared it up in those two games. 200 yards rushing, 75 yards receiving, and 75, that'd be a record. 7 touchdowns in those two games following a loss. We'll see if Green Bay feeds him next week as well and really tries to get him involved. I would think that they should, but Green Bay's got a big game with the Giants coming up, and I'll be back next week to discuss that game with you in more detail after the game, hopefully in a much better circumstance with them coming off a big win against the Giants. That does it for me. Make sure to check out Matt, Dan, and Janelle as they continue to break down this game and start breaking down Packers-Giants. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. You can follow the podcast at Packaday Podcast. Please go out and like, subscribe, and tell a friend. You know, we will take any support we can get, and we always appreciate it greatly. I appreciate you listening today. I know it's not always the one to listen to after a tough loss, so I appreciate you sticking with it and hanging with me. Keep an eye out for my grades throughout the course of the week, PackerReport.com. You can get all the grades out there throughout the course of the season, so make sure to go do that as well. But thanks as always for listening. I always appreciate it. Even after a crushing defeat, I'll leave you with a big go, Pack, go.